Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to tonight's edition of Jump Right In, a production of 1111 Broadcasting. This is Splash, and my pond is open. We had a great show on Monday night, rejoicing over January's jobs report. Still some areas of concern, of course. But the private sector seems to have us on the right track, even if the president and the Congress can't or won't. Now, we'll also jump all over. We also jumped all over the upcoming Obamacare case before the Supreme Court. Again, Elmos, don't get your hopes up. What we didn't get to—the backlash to the backlash over Netanyahu's speech and John Kerry thinking he would have a chance to become president—we'll get to those first thing tonight. I'll tell you, it was a terrific show. So if you missed Monday night's show or any other episode of Jump Right In, you can catch it on our blog at 1111broadcasting.com or listen to it right on your Facebook, right on our Facebook page. 1111 Broadcasting. In addition to BB and Kerry, we're going to talk ISIS, Iran, and the filibuster. You'll never guess, unless you heard it with your own ears, who wants to limit the filibuster even further and who is saying, dude, shut up. Anyway, so much to cover, so little time. The number to call is 215-383-5730. And I encourage you to jump right in. Wade carefully if you must, but remember, in my pond, everyone swims at their own risk. We'll be here for the next hour doing the thing I love to do most, talking smack about politics. And if you want to chime in, give us a call. I promise to bite, and I promise that you're going to love it. As all shows are, that we do are posted here on our face on our show, blah, 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 blah. All shows are posted right on our blog, past, present, and future. So just go to 1111broadcasting.com and you can listen to a show, make comments, suggestions, or just say hi. Now, you can also fan us on Facebook at 1111 Broadcasting. All shows are posted there as well. And so like us and you can listen right on Facebook. You can jump right into the show chat room tonight. You'll need a free login from Blog Talk Radio. It takes less than a minute. You just put in an email address, pick a screen name and a password, and voila, you can jump right into the chat room, pick on people, or even pick on me. Now, if you hear me pause, then I'm probably scanning what somebody or everybody's saying in the chat room. Sometimes I just can't help myself. Now, if you want to participate in the show, put your stamp on tonight's episode. Wade into my pond then, by all means. Dial the number right there at the top of your show page, 215-383-5730. I would love to talk to you. Put me to the test. It'll be your time to shine. Now, before we get into tonight's show, let me tell you about Choice Mattress and Furniture. When it comes to mattresses and bedding, David Ritter and the staff at Choice Mattress and Furniture know their stuff. I took my family to Choice Mattress, and everything was considered from our weight to our age to our height, the way each of us sleeps. Right, the right mattress was personally selected for each of us. Now my whole family sleeps in great comfort all night long from Choice from on beds from Choice Mattress, and yours can too. Every mattress carried by Choice Mattress comes with a 5, 10, or even 15-year 100% full replacement warranty, not a prorated limited warranty like other stores. Chances are that if you bought a bed in the Daytona Beach area in the last 20 years, then you bought that bed from David. With over 20 years of experience, David knows beds. And you should see all the other fine lines of furniture Choice Mattress has for every room in your home. Go see David and the fine folks at Choice Mattress and Furniture, located on the corner of LPGA and Nova Road, 1501 North Nova Road in Holly Hill. If you just have questions, David's always happy to answer them. Give him a call, 386-226-BEDS. That's 386-226-2337. Choice Mattress, simply the best choice that you can make in your sleep. Now comes the backlash to the BB backlash. If you want to talk about this speech Netanyahu is doing, with me, then give me a call, 215-383-5730. That's 215-383-5730. Excuse me. The Republicans, this is from an article I just popped out of Politico, and the just so you know, the Republicans and conservative Jewish organizations are threatening to shaming campaigns against Democrats who skip Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's planned speech and a joint meeting of Congress next month. Even talking about not showing, they say, is forsaking America's relationship with Israel. Uh-oh, could be trouble. Joe Biden apparently isn't worried. Gotta love Joe. A spokesperson for the vice president on Friday said Biden would not preside over the joint meeting because he'll be traveling abroad. Light up the flame. Here he goes on Air Force Two. I just love Joe. He bumbles along, never worries about anything. What is he, like 72 years old? What does he care? So he'll be traveling abroad. If he was my Veep, he'd be out of town all the time. The furor around the speech, which Democrats say is forcing them to choose between loyalty to Israel and loyalty to their party, reflects a slow transformation. Well, at least they've downgraded things. Instead of forcing them to choose between Israel and Obama, now they are being forced to choose between Israel and their party loyalty. Bottom line, they never had to make a choice at all. They made it into a choice. But it doesn't reflect. But it does reflect a slow transformation. Though the overwhelming majority of American Jewish voters remain Democrat, Jewish Republicans have grown in number and influence. That's a trend conservative Israeli politicians led by Netanyahu are seeking to use to their advantage. And a small number of well-funded, right-leaning American Jews are eager to exploit. See, everyone has made this partisan, the left, the right, everyone. The dispute centers around, of course, an agreement between House Speaker John Boehner and Israel's Ambassador Ron Dermer for Netanyahu to use the speech to address what he sees as the dangers of U.S. rapprochement with Iran. The Obama administration, which is in deep in negotiations with the Islamic State, and by Islamic State they meant Iran, not ISIS, over curbing its nuclear program, sees the speech as an attempt to make it harder for the U.S. lawmakers to support the diplomatic efforts by portraying it as a direct threat to Israel. Netanyahu says he doesn't trust Iran to abide by any deal and thinks the U.S. diplomats are being naive. Democrats, by contrast, see a viable agreement that removes Iran's nukes as increasing Israel's security. That'd be nice if the deal actually removed the nukes. This is a problem for the Smurfs because the Jewish American community, just like the public as a whole, doesn't trust Iran. And that's a truth. The fact that neither Boehner nor Dermer cleared the speech first with the White House and that it comes just 2 weeks before Israeli election was seen by the administration and senior Democrats as particularly manipulative. Footage of Netanyahu being applauded by the U.S. Congress and railing against Iran couldn't help but bolster his image just before voters decide whether to keep his liked party in power, they say. Translation, Democrats don't like him, and they don't like his party. So it's a good point, and since Obama and the Smurfs don't like them, they're playing favorites in the election by not attending the speech or even objecting to it. The truth is, Netanyahu is going to win anyway, so what does it matter? It's just a speech. Now, both sides are accusing the other of excessive partisanship. Democrats say that Boehner politicized the speech by inviting Netanyahu behind the White House's back, like they've never done anything behind Boehner's back. Republicans say it's actually the Democrats who've made things worse by threatening not to be there for a key ally just to settle a score with Boehner. You know, both sides are right. Boehner should have followed protocol. Of course, Obama would have said no. the Democrats would have said no. But the left is making way too much of this, way. Neither side is willing to take the high ground here. Boehner could say, you know, you're right. Let's cancel the speech and reschedule it for after the Israeli elections. He could do that. At the same time, the Smurfs could say, okay, they didn't follow protocol. Let's scold them. But then get on with it, because after all, it's just a speech. Either way, most observers of American-Israeli relations say Netanyahu and his aides appear to have misread Washington politics even more seriously than his not-so-subtle attempt to rally support behind Mitt Romney in 2012 presidential election. So this is payback on the part of the Smurfs? Privately, diplomats and Democrats in Congress scoff at the Israeli government's claim that they were caught off guard by how partisan the situation has become. Democrat leaders are pushing for Netanyahu to reconsider or cancel the speech altogether. I'm telling you, that's just not going to happen. And Netanyahu has already said he's still coming to speak. And so even if every Democrat doesn't show up, then you'll see that they're still going to get the message that he intends to deliver. But as of now, the speech still looks like it's going forward, and Netanyahu has confirmed that the Republican-Jewish coalition will be taking attendance, of course. This is, I think, a critical visit by the prime minister. If the Democrats would rather put partisan politics ahead of principle and walk out on the prime minister of Israel, then we have an obligation to make that known, and said Matt Brooks, the executive director of the Republican-Jewish coalition. And look, folks, I understand that this speech is a couple of weeks before the election. I get that. But so is the negotiations between Iran and the United States and other world leaders on this deal. It's all falling and coinciding in the same spot. So clearly, it's looking like everyone's going to come to some kind of agreement or are moving close to that, even though I don't think it'll happen. And so what choice does Netanyahu have if nobody's getting his message? This was, to him, a way to get that message through. I don't think it has anything to do with his elections back at home. I think that would be a secondary benefit, and he's going to win anyway. But the bottom line here is that this deal could happen right on their election day. What does he do then? That's a good thing to consider. Brooks would not specify what methods his shaming campaigns would use, but he promised that his group will do what it could. And since it's backed in part by billionaire Sheldon Adelson, who's led efforts to connect Republican politics to support of Israel, there's at least an implicit threat to use his funds to draw attention in the district and home states of any member who's not in the chamber to listen to Netanyahu on March the 3rd. Aides to Adelson did not respond to requests for the comments, and that's typical of Adelson. Now, we will commit whatever resources we need to make sure that people are aware of the facts that given the choice to stand with Israel and the Prime Minister Netanyahu in opposition to the nuclear Iran, they chose partisan interests and to stand with President Obama. That's what Brooks said. But these guys are crazy. If they think the Jews are going to suddenly start voting for the GOP in great numbers, they're just crazy. The reason for that the Jews vote Smurf goes much deeper than that. But other groups are sending similar messages. We will, of course, be publicly condemning any Democrat who does not show up for the speech unless they have a doctor's note. I love that, said Mort Klein, president of the 30,000-member Zionist Organization of America. It's really an anti-American, anti-patriotic position to take. And see, I think there they just go too far. Now, you know, I mean, I think the Democrats should go to this speech. I think they're making a mountain out of a molehill. But anti-American and anti-patriotic, you know, I'm sorry, but this is America. And you're allowed to have whatever opinion of Israel and Israeli-American relationship that you want. So that claim is just nonsense. But AIPAC, A-I-P-A-C, the largest U.S. pro-Israeli lobby that's officially nonpartisan but often seems to lean right, is encouraging members of Congress to attend the speech. But the group has been largely silent about the controversy up to this point. And that's the way it should be handled by everyone, Smurfs and Elmos alike. It's just a speech. Now, And matter of fact, the Democrats would have been a lot better off if they just didn't attend and didn't make a point of it. But, you know, whatever. And AIPAC spokesman declined comment on plans around the speech. Netanyahu is scheduled to deliver a separate speech to the AIPAC annual conference in Washington as part of the same trip. Congress can argue about whether Boehner and Netanyahu violated protocol, but Democrats have no choice to show now. This is an argument from George W. Bush's press secretary, Ari Fleischer. I'm sure you all remember him. Whether it's true or not that they violated protocol, what difference does it make? I've been saying this all week. At this point, the prime minister's coming. Are you really going to boycott him? Fleischer said. Fleischer predicted that most Democrats will ultimately show for the speech. But if they don't, he said they'll be succumbing to political pressure from their liberal base, and that will lead to more partisan discord in the American-Israeli relationship. I couldn't agree with him more. If they boycott the speech, they'll be casting their lot with the more liberal, not pro-Israel base of the party. And that would be a shocking development. It would be a radical break, Fleischer said. Republican Lee Zeldin, a freshman from New York, who's currently the only Jewish Republican in the Congress, said he believes the only reason Democrats are voicing concern about the speech is to give President Barack Obama cover. There really isn't any debate as to what the right thing, right decision is here, Zeldin said. Israel is our strongest ally, and in an area of the world that is facing the rising tide of Islamic extremism and state sponsors of terrorism in pursuit of a nuclear capability, Zeldin said. It really should be a no-brainer to warmly embrace the leader of Israel, no matter who that person is, ever, without missing a beat. So the Smurfs are covering for Obama because he doesn't like Netanyahu and he's moving towards this agreement, whether Netanyahu or Israel likes it or not. The comments like these, of course, inflame an already tense hill even more. Told that Republicans are now blaming Democrats for turning Netanyahu's visit partisan. Representative Steve Israel, that's Democrat from New York, who hosts a meeting between Israel and Ambassador Ron Dermer and seven Jewish Democrat lawmakers Wednesday morning, where they all said they weren't planning to boycott, but wanted a way out. He called this a ridiculous Republican spin, but they did. Smurfs didn't have to get all bent out of shape over this. They didn't. It's just a speech. This is nowhere near as bad as when Jimmy Carter, former president, who should have known better, directly defied George W. Bush's wishes and went to the Middle East to hug the Palestinian leadership. By far, this speech pales in comparison. Partisan hackery of this nature doesn't deserve a response and is beneath the dignity of the bipartisan nature of U.S.-Israel relations, Israel said. So funny, his name is Israel, confuses me. Then why did the Smurfs respond in such a partisan way? Why did they make such a big deal over this? Their reaction is indeed a response, right? I mean, left? The threat of punishments don't have many Democrats worried, though some left-leaning Jewish leaders have also warned of the unpredictable politics of actually going through with skipping the speech. Hill Democrats say they're confident that the most reaction will continue to be defined by seeing the invitation as a transparent ploy by Boehner and Netanyahu. Now, the other advantage that they have, folks, is that this is now. It's almost as far from the 2016 campaign season as you could possibly get. So Americans do tend to have short memories. Although I will tell you, Jewish people do not have short memories. And it's primarily why they'd vote Democrat in the first place. And even if they don't, at the end of the day, 70% of the Jewish American community is going to vote Smurf. It's tradition, folks. That's what it is. It's just so deep seated in tradition, they're voting for Democrats, and the things that uh, that uh, support for those that are on the outside looking in that Israel has been so used to in its history. And though they're aware of just how big the checks are that pro-Republicans and pro-Netanyahu forces can say they'll write, they're not worried about losing support from Democrats, independents, or most American Jews. Our members who are staunchly pro-Israel, who go out there every day and talk about this, are against this, said senior House aide. And this is a confidence that I've not seen in Smurfs since the 2004 tsunami wipeout of 2014. The aide predicted that though a number of Democrats will skip the speech, either out of protest or because of scheduling conflicts, any Democrat who might be vulnerable to public punishment campaign would likely make the decision to attend anyway. See? It's all about their reelection. If they're safe, then there's no problem skipping the speech. If they're not safe, then suddenly a politician is willing to compromise his or her own position and choose Israel over their loyalty to Obama, or in this case, their party. So the Smurfs made a mountain out of a molehill, and now it is a whole new mountain range. What you gonna do? I know what we'll do. We'll change the subject. I saw this Politico article the other day, and I meant to get to it on Monday, but I didn't. And, you know, I almost laughed about this because the title just jumped right off that page and Kerry opens the door to, John Kerry opens the door to a 2016 White House bid, but just slightly. Yeah, we'll slam it shut, people saying that we would have been better off if Romney had beaten Obama. Back in 2005, I heard zero people saying we would have been better off had Kerry won in 2004. Even as much as the Smurfs hated GWB, I don't remember a single one uttering those words. I wish Kerry had won. He was that bad a candidate. If you want to talk about this, and John Kerry, 215-383-5730. That's 215-383-5730. But you know, it would be interesting to see Kerry square off against Hillary. Two rich, Wall Street-loving Smurfs fumbling over each other to see who can trick the middle class into thinking that they will be their next champion. Anyway, Secretary of State John Kerry said in an interview broadcast on Sunday that he has not ruled out a 2016 White House bid, which would put him in a wide-open Democrat primary field behind frontrunner Hillary Clinton. Now, wouldn't that be just the saddest thing ever if Hillary got traumatized by Kerry in 2016? I just don't know how she would be able to put her new grandbaby on her knee and tell her, or him, I don't know if it's a boy or girl, tell her that story. I just don't know how she could bring herself to do it. Kerry, the party's presidential nominee in 2004, told NBC's Meet the Press that nobody ever says never. Sure they do. They just don't always mean it. And they don't say never because they want the attention, like Mitt Romney, for example. Mitt Romney, oh my gosh. However, Kerry said that he could think of no scenario whatsoever in which he would start such a campaign. How stupid is that? How about that you think you would make a good president? Why did you run in 2004 anyway? What in the hell scenario was that? No scenario whatsoever? You see, this is why we are so lucky that this man wasn't elected. He is positively clueless. And this is the United States' top diplomat. I haven't thought about it, said Kerry, and hasn't thought about being president. I haven't thought about it, and I'm, as you can tell, pretty busy. Kerry said from Germany, of course, where he is participating in the Munich Security Conference. Wonder what they're talking about. Iran. To be sure, the country's top diplomat, Kerry, has been busy traveling around the world to help resolve an array of international crises and situations, including the battle against Islamic extremist groups, the Iran nuclear deal, a potential Israeli-Palestinian peace agreement, and Ukraine's battle against Russian-backed separatists. I'm going to tell you, folks, there's not a single issue that I just listed there that they are going to get to. They're just not. That's what he's been doing. And of course, he doesn't go to sleep at night, so he had no time to think about being president then. He doesn't stop and eat for lunch, take a bite, but then go to the bathroom. He's got no time to think about being president. Among those being mentioned as potential Democrat primary challengers to Clinton and the former Secretary of State and 2008 White House candidate are former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, and Vice President Joe Biden, who ran for president in 88 and 08. Attention, all Smurfs, Obots, and every left-leaning person in this beautiful country of ours. Get Liz Warren. If she does not run, then you can kiss the White House goodbye. She is everything every other Smurf pretends to be. Clinton, of course, has not even declared her candidacy, and she won't, unless and until the Smurfs allow her to start that race at the finish line. She will not jump into this race. She refuses to be traumatized again, and word in the wind is that her fundraising's not going very well. That's something for her to be alarmed about as well, which could mean that people are starting to move in a different direction or waiting for somebody else to emerge as a potential challenger to Clinton. Kerry, a former Massachusetts senator, has previously suggested that his current job is his last in politics. Doesn't matter. He's a flip-flopper. He reminds me a lot of Mitt Romney. And if Kerry runs, if he gets the Smurf nod, then there will be an Elmo in the White House come January 2017. Matter of fact, anybody else runs except Elizabeth Warren, you guys are toast. So anyway, Kerry is dropping hints. Meanwhile, he's demonstrating his delusion once again regarding that JV team. You know, I'm sure you've heard about them, right? Yeah. But it's just uncanny. I have to tell you, hate George W. Bush, love George W. Bush. We are so lucky. John Kerry never became president. So lucky. If you want to talk about John Kerry and his delusion or why you don't think he's as delusional as I think he is, the number to call 215-383-5730, 215-383-5730. From a political article this past weekend, Secretary of State John Kerry is defending the administration's progress in its fight against the Islamic State of Iraq. I hate what they call that. It gives them such legitimacy. ISIS, the Islamic scum in Iraq and Syria. Not these crazy names that they give them. Saying that the U.S. is on the road to defeating the terrorist group. You know, I've driven across the state of Texas the long way, across I-10, from Beaumont, Texas, in the east, all the way across to El Paso. It is 878 miles of road. Longest, loneliest road ever. Nothing but desert. Hey, you just pass through a big city every once in a while, but not as you get out there. It is one of the longest, most discouraging rides. You think Texas will never end? Then even as signs, they even have signs to help motivate you. Texas border, 150 miles. Texas border, 100 miles. Texas border, 50 miles, like a countdown. And then as you get to that last 50 miles, you start to pep up. You start to get excited. It's about to happen. We're about to leave Texas. And then you see it, the Texas border. It's so exciting. It's so It is so over. That long, discouraging drive, it's finally over. It's really over. Yay! And then you realize, oh no! You're in New Mexico, and it's just like Texas. More of the same. Long, boring, flat, discouraging. And then you realize it is like Texas never ended. This is the Obama-Kerry plan for ISIS. This road, Kerry says, we are on to defeating ISIS. It's just like Texas. It will never end. It will always be the same. In an interview airing Sunday on NBC's Meet the Press, Kerry urged patience in what he called a long-term mission. Patience. Long-term mission. You know, Iraq was a long-term mission. Where was the Smurfs' patience then? I wonder. Asked by host Chuck Todd whether the U.S.-led coalition is winning in its goal of degrading and destroying ISIS, Kerry said, I believe we are on the road to yes, and I absolutely do. I believe we are on the road to. What road is Kerry talking about? They have no plan to go anywhere or do anything. It is like that dude Mayhem in the Allstate commercial keeps saying he's in Kerry's car on this road, and he keeps saying, recalculate. The dude's driving in circles, so it causes whatever plan they think they have to end up in a complete wreck. The coalition, Kerry says, is strong and more committed than ever. Really? Is that why the UAE dropped out, sitting back, citing lack of search and rescue? They finally jumped back in, doing a few sorties here and there. But Kerry cited, particularly with a greater commitments from Jordan, which launched stepped-up airstrikes against ISIS after a video surfaced of one of their downed pilots being burned alive in a cage. That's right, because they burned one of their pilots to death, not because you built this coalition. They stepped it up because one of their people got viciously murdered in a most gruesome fashion. And even still, there's a division inside Jordan as to whether to step up their ISIS campaign or pull out altogether. So far, they've stepped it up. But that's not because the coalition is stronger than ever. It's because Jordan is pissed. Kerry also said that the U.S.-led coalition has regained a large stretch of territory from ISIS and killed a significant proportion of their top leadership. All true. And yet, ISIS sprouts more leaders and now has infiltrated at least 12 other Middle Eastern countries, including Yemen, where we're pulling out embassies all over the place. Our efforts there have completely fallen apart. We believe everything, including the government process in Iraq itself, is moving in the right direction, Kerry said. Yeah, except ISIS got all of our military hardware from the Iraqis, who tucked tail and ran because we tucked tail and ran. This kills me. The administration has recently faced criticism from congressional Republicans for being too cautious in the air campaign against ISIS in both Iraq and Syria. But Kerry reiterated that the U.S. would not be committing ground combat troops in the fight, but instead would rely on Iraqi and other ground forces. Really? Just some Republicans? How about all three of his former defense secretaries? How about Dianne Feinstein? She told NBC's Andrea Mitchell, ISIS is a major varsity team. If you want to use those kinds of monikers, and she said that Obama was wrong to characterize the terrorists as a JV team back in January, I think I've learned one thing about this president, and that it's that he is very cautious. Maybe in this instance, too cautious. Maybe? So it is not surprising that when asked about providing military assistance to the government forces in Ukraine, Kerry was also cautious. I have no doubt that additional assistance of the economic kind and other kinds that will be going to the Ukraine, he said, adding he wouldn't comment specifically on the non-economic aid. The Ukraine, of course, needs military aid desperately. But Putin has said that any military aid to the Ukraine government would be viewed as a threat to Russia. So all Obama and Kerry will give is humanitarian aid. So they are okay standing up to the JV team from up in the air. But Russia flexes a single muscle and they cower from assisting the Ukrainians. This is not about caution. This is about a lack of kahunas. Plain and simple. These people know that they can push Obama and Kerry around. Iran's doing it. ISIS is doing it. Russia is doing it. It's embarrassing. It is plain and simple the pussification of America. But these two smurfs have no problem getting all mad at their own countrymen over a speech from an ally. Then they are all big and bad. You didn't ask us. Well, harumph. We are just going to boycott you. Except for those of us who will be hurt in the election, of course. Or cost us Jewish votes, of course. What a bunch of putzes. Defense Secretary nominee Ash Carter said that in his Senate confirmation hearing last week that he would incline towards arming Ukrainian forces, although the administration has not commented on that. So that's the new guy. First of all, sure they have. The administration has cowered to Putin, not so discreet threats that arming the Ukraine loyalists would be seen as a threat to Russian security. Look at that. Ash is already setting the stage to be Obama's next ex-Secretary of Defense. Has any president out there had in history five Secretaries of Defense? I wonder. But look at him. He's saying he would incline towards arming Ukrainian government forces, although the administration has not commented on that. He is already running counter to the current here, folks. Meanwhile, Kerry, while contemplating a White House run, believes we are on the road to defeating ISIS. Well, apparently, ISIS didn't get that same memo because they've ramped up their recruiting efforts. We're going to talk about that. But first, before we do that, let me remind you that when it comes to beds and mattresses, David Ritter and the staff at Choice Mattress and Furniture know their stuff. My whole family is now sleeping in beds from Choice Mattress, and you cannot say enough about the benefits of a great night's sleep on the right mattress chosen especially for you. Every mattress carried by Choice Mattress comes with a 5, 10, or even 15-year 100% full replacement warranty, not a prorated warranty, limited warranty like some other stores. With over 20 years of experience, David knows beds. And check out all the other fine furniture Choice Mattress has for every room in your home. Go see Choice Mattress and Furniture, located at 1501 North Nova Road in Holly Hill. If you just have questions, give them a call, 386-226-BEDS. That's 386-226-2337. Choice Mattress, simply the best choice you can make in your sleep. Now, I got to tell you, folks, because this, to me, is rather discouraging. So Kerry claims that we're on the road to defeating ISIS. Meanwhile, ISIS is stepping up their recruiting efforts. These videos that were released mark a significant push that the Islamic State is having towards Francophone recruitment. That's recruitment in countries that speak French. There's about 30 of them. This is cited by Varian Khan of the Terrorism Research and Analysis Consortium, a Florida-based global research firm specializing in political violence and terrorism. He says if it also results in transnational attacks outside the Sham, that's outside their taken territory, then that is just gravy on top of the plate for them. Some of the propaganda also bears English subtitles indicating that they aim to recruit Westerners. Islamic State has so far put out four of the French language videos asking the question, "What are you waiting for?" That was beginning in November. Now, the initial video called on foreign fighters to attack their host country if they cannot join the Islamic State in the Silafate. I never know how to say that word. I don't like that word anyway because it gives them credibility. They in their neck of the woods, let's call it that. ISIS did not want this exclusively for the French audience. Oh, no. Said Ryan Morrow, security analyst for the Clarion Project, which is an education group focused on Islamic extremism. The group wanted to send a message to Americans as well. In other words, not only to recruit Westerners, but to strike fear at the hearts of the United States civilian population and other people in Western countries. The recent video features a series of men on the street style interviews asking jihadists their opinion on everything from murder of the Jordanian Air Force pilot Moaz al-Kasieba, who was burned alive in January by ISIS, and also to the beheading of the Japanese journalist Kenji Goto. One of the seven jihadists featured in the most recent video is likely Hayat Boumediene. That's the 26-year-old widow of Amedy Coulibaly. He's the one that murdered four people in that Paris supermarket. She was seen last January 12th in a surveillance video in Istanbul Airport. Is now French law enforcement's most wanted woman and is believed to have joined ISIS in Syria and Iraq. Now, the supermarket siege came 2 days after 12 people were murdered in an attack on Charlie Hebdo, the news outlet known for its controversial series of cartoons mocking the followers of Islam's prophet Muhammad. Although that attack was linked to al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, Amedy Coulibaly, I don't know how to say his name, is believed to have been a follower of the Islamic State. Ever since the Charlie Hebdo attack avenged the prophet, there has been a growing trend to justify terrorist acts such as this murder by claiming it was an act of vengeance, Khan said. This is just this week in Sinai, Egypt, ISIS released a video titled "We Swear We Will Revenge." Khan believes that the videos, along with other recruitment efforts, have been having an impact. It's very possible that Paris attacks were influenced by this video, which was extremely popular with the Twitter crowd. Hang on, folks. So, they are using social media like there's no tomorrow. Islamic State is making videos targeting the French because they are having success there, said Morrow. In the aftermath of the latest attacks on French soldiers, ISIS knows that they will generate attention. And the videos, the French-speaking fighter boldly show their faces in some of the videos, indicating they have no intention to ever return to France. Totally understand that. The theme, I don't understand that. I mean, they better not come back. The theme of most of their interviews is that France is no place for a Muslim, and they cannot truly actualize their faith in that country. Oh, God. Tell them. Send that message. Get them out of there. I mean, that's the problem right there, is that they're infiltrated. France has allowed itself to be infiltrated with that. So we'll just have to see. But France is not a country where citizenship, culture, or birth can make you French, Khan said. And as national identity is in a number of factors not attainable by outsiders, so it is all France's fault. All France's. Hang on 1 second, folks. We may be having a technical difficulty here, although, nope, it looks like we are indeed on the air. So basically what they're saying is it's all France's fault because you can't be French. Add to this the measures that France has taken to protect itself against the insider threats it faces, including banning the Najib, That's the veil or mask, niqab, plus the usual complaints that Western religious freedom actually oppresses Muslims by exposing them to what they find morally reprehensible. And there you get the reason for the repeated triumphant rejection. So now, it is that the French aren't anal enough about sex. Do we see how good we have it here in America when Christians are exposed to something that they find morally reprehensible, whether it's open sex, whether it's whatever, whether it's even gay sex? They don't declare jihad. Instead, many of them jump right in and get involved. The video also calls on jihadists to rise up in Belgium, Germany, Switzerland, and the West. Khan believes that the video and other Islamic State tactics have even inspired attacks on law enforcement in France and Canada. Islamic State is undoubtedly the terrorist group that has been the most successful in their online media strategies, Morrow said. Well, there's your proof that they're a JV team right there. Only the younger kids can negotiate this Facebook, Twitter world that we live in. But that doesn't mean they're not dangerous. This successful strategy has enabled ISIS to win over the next generation of jihadists, Morrow said. And a young radical can feel as if he or she is part of an actual community in the jihadist online world. Unlike Al-Qaeda, ISIS is actually claimed to be seizing ground and making progress. These videos help ISIS supporters feel as if they are a part of an exciting turning point in Islamic history. Oh, my goodness. So they feel like they're in an exciting turning point of Islamic history. Yeah, until a drone says, "Say goodnight, Gracie." If we would only get serious and launch the campaign to end all campaigns, there would be no videos, no posts on Facebook, no tweets to these nitwits. We need to take the fight to them and show them what jihad really is. We need to drop 200,000 of our best all around them, among them, hunt them down, execute them, and bury their sorry dead asses in pig fat just in case Allah is real, so that they can never go to heaven for their 70 virgins or grapes or whatever. That's what we used to do back in World War I, and they stopped messing with our supply lines. These people know nothing else. And if they go ahead and convince their following that they're going to be led to Allah, then the last thing they want to do is be buried in pig fat. That's what we need to do. But if we have a bonehead like Kerry trying to convince us that airstrikes alone have put us on the road to eventually degrading and ultimately destroying ISIS, then ISIS will continue to recruit, continue to grow, and continue to kill. And then there's Iran. Oh, my me. If you want to talk about the Iran nuclear deal that's coming up, give me a call, 215-383-5730. That's 215-383-5730. President Barack Obama, this is from the AP. I found this story on the AP. President Barack Obama said Monday that the time has come for Iran to decide whether to accept a nuclear deal. And he acknowledged very real differences with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu over the negotiations. Yeah, well, you're going to hear more about them on March the 3rd, whether you want to or not. In a campaign speech, Netanyahu criticized the international negotiations with Iran and portrayed his scheduled address to the U.S. Congress next month as an attempt to describe Israel's objections. A bad deal with Iran is forming in Munich that will endanger Israel's existence. These are the words of Benjamin Netanyahu, referring to the talks over the weekend where Kerry is and where he can't even think about being president between Germany and the United States Secretary of State John Kerry and his Iranian counterpart. Therefore, I am determined to go to Washington and present Israel's position before the members of Congress and the American people. What choice does he have? What choice does he have? They're going forward with this negotiation without the blessings of Israel and their leaders. After all, Congress will have to approve. I'm not really sure this is true. Does Congress have to approve any deal Obama inks with Iran? I'm not so sure. And there's no guarantee, of course, that they that the deal would be approved if he had to get approval. But Obama said that the world powers negotiating with Iran are unified in their offer while acknowledging the forceful opposition from Netanyahu. What is Netanyahu? What is Israel? Are they not a world power? Are they not even supposed to be part of these negotiations? Aren't they the ones most threatened by Iran having a nuclear weapon? So Obama says that the world powers negotiating with Iran, the world powers are unified. So the world powers are unified in accepting a deal that they rejected out of hand when Iran offered it in the first place early on over a year ago. These world powers are going to accept whatever they can get, whatever Iran will give them, just so they can say that they got something. This deal will not stop Iran from recalibrating their centrifuges. It will not stop them from enriching uranium to weapons grade or even eventually becoming a nuclear-armed Iran. This deal sucks. That's what Netanyahu is coming to Washington to tell us about. It is what Iran offered early on. Nobody expects to get their first offer. That's the first rule of negotiation. You throw the most out there you could possibly ever want and dream of. The United States did the exact same thing. It is what Iran offered earlier on. Nobody expects to get that. But these world powers that are unified in giving Iran what they wanted in the first place, and it will result in the lifting of all sanctions, not just the limited ones that were only supposed to be lifted for 6 months, more than a year ago after two full extensions of talks. But Obama says, I don't want to be coy. The prime minister and I have very real differences about Iran's sanctions. Obama said at the White House conference with Chancellor Angela Merkel of Germany and other parties, another party to the talks. The president defended his decision not to meet with Netanyahu while he's in town at the invitation of the Republican House Speaker John Boehner. Obama cited the precedent for U.S. presidents not to meet with foreign leaders who are facing an upcoming election to avoid the perception of trying to influence the outcome. Now, notice here that he did not mention that they went behind his back, that the that Boehner and Dermer went behind his back. Notice that Obama didn't mention that. That's very, very, very key here. The Democrat lawmakers fear that Netanyahu will use the speech to lawmakers to try to embarrass Obama and further his own reelection prospects. Look at this. The Smurfs fear embarrassment over their willingness to cave to Iran. They fear embarrassment more than Iran getting WMDs. They fear embarrassment for choosing Iran over Israel. Listen up, Smurfs. If you fear embarrassment, then chances are there's something wrong with what you're doing. The list of House Democrats who have said that they will skip the speech grew to Monday to 6, and liberal independent Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont became the first senator to announce that he won't attend. How will skipping this speech alleviate the Smurf fear that Netanyahu may try to embarrass Obama over this embarrassing deal? Will they somehow not hear it? Will they not hear about it? Will they bury their heads in the sand? Will they put their hands over their ears and loudly blabber la 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 anytime somebody tries to mention it, plays a video of BB's speech? The president of the United States heads up our foreign policy, and the idea that the president wasn't even consulted, that is wrong. Sanders said in a statement, I'm not going. I may watch it on TV, but I'm not going. Now, I like Bernie, but how is watching it on TV a boycott? It is like objecting to live nudity of a strip club, but watching the Playboy channel. Netanyahu just wants to deliver his message. If you listen to it on TV, then the message was delivered. His mission was accomplished. Ignoring the speech altogether is a boycott. Watching it on TV is just stupid. Israel has long claimed a nuclear-armed Iran would pose a grave threat to the world peace and security. Does anyone, Smurf or Elmo, disagree with that? Israel's views a nuclear-armed Iran as a threat to its very existence, noting the calls by Iranian leaders for the destruction of the Jewish state. Decent cause for concern, wouldn't you agree? Iran says its nuclear program is for peaceful purposes, but critics in the West dismiss such explanations. So there is agreement on Iran's nuclear ambitions between Israel and the so-called United World Powers. Obama warned Tehran that he sees no reason to further extend negotiations for a basic agreement next month. Of course he doesn't, because even the Smurfs won't let him. It's not that Iran is out of time, it's that Obama is out of time. Congress, including many Smurfs, have wanted to pass sanctions, a sanctions bill that would have given Obama and Kerry much leverage. This is what will happen if you don't come to terms. Obama rejected that, begging his Smurf critics to give him more time. Not Iran, him. Smurfs have said they will not pass a sanctions bill for another couple of months. That was their discreet deadline to Obama. Get this done. We are at the point where we need to make a decision, Obama said. He said the only question remaining is, does Iran have the political will and desire to get the deal done? Looking for my kids in my room? Fuck no. They are milking this for all it's worth. And when Obama actually agrees to what Iran offered in the first place and then lifts all the sanctions like Iran earned it, Iran is going to go home and they're going to laugh their fucking asses off. Look at how tough Obama is. Congress gives him the deadline, and he is acting like he is the one giving Iran the deadline after having extended that deadline twice out of sheer weakness. Tell me that they needed that extra time to get Iran to agree to what the Iran offered them in the first place, and we rejected. This is a prime example of how Obama is the worst negotiator in presidential history. How is it that with his own countrymen, he insists, my way or the highway. But with Iran, he needs 2 6-month extensions to capitulate to get them to agree to what they were willing to give in the first place. Iran officials say on Sunday signaled a willingness to come to an agreement. This is the opportunity to do it. We need to seize this opportunity, Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif told a gathering of the world's top diplomats, defensive officials. He said an extension would be in no one's interest. Of course, he's getting what they offered in the first place. He has got to be creaming his pants. It's like you're the ugliest dude on the planet and you have just gotten Angelina Jolie drunk enough to say yes. Obama argued that the extension negotiations with Iran have been time well spent. I just don't get it. Obama has achieved zero movement from Iran. Zero. How is this time well spent? Well, it certainly was time well spent for Iran. Obama argued the extended negotiations with Iran, the program has not only frozen, but with respect to the program has not only been frozen, but with respect to, for example, 20% enriched uranium, they've reversed it. So we're in a better position than we were before the interim program was set up, Obama said. First of all, being in a better position before the temporary 6-month agreement was not the goal. Keeping Iran from getting a nuke was the goal. This deal is it. This is the final deal that we're going to make with Iran. If they ink this deal, that's all there is. That's all there is. There will be no more. And so when – hang on 1 second, folks. I just got to regather myself. So this is it. This is the deal. And under this deal, Iran can achieve a nuclear arsenal. This is actually an agreement to let Iran get nukes eventually. Secondly, we did not freeze anything. This Obama claim has been debunked by every fact checker out there. Boehner was quickly to point that out, by the way. President Obama tried to clean up his debunked claims on Iraq's nuclear program today, but he still couldn't help but repeat a false claim. Now more than ever, it's critical that the American people hear the truth about the threat posed by Iran's nuclear program, said Boehner. Of course, why listen to Boehner? He's biased. Here, listen to David Albright, the head of the Institute for Science and International Security. He said the president's language was a little bit odd. He said that the halt in Iran's program from 2003 to 2005, Albright said, the halt in Iran's nuclear program from 2003 to 2005 was a more substantial suspension of enrichment activities. In effect, the amount of nuclear material available to Iran has gone up about a bomb's worth during the joint of action, Albright said. That's the six-month temporary lifting of the sanctions. Obama, the weakest negotiator on the planet. And speaking of weakest negotiator, what's the one thing you don't do when you're trying to gain position in negotiations? We just talked about it. Surrender leverage. That's what Obama did when he begged Congress not to pass the new sanctions legislation that would have told Iraq what would happen in 6 months if you didn't come to terms. But that's what he begged Congress not to do. Now he wants to surrender leverage where? In Congress, when his party is the minority. Is he jumping on his high horse? Is he nuts? Or is he just a little bit of both? I wonder. But this story came to me from Politico. And if you want to talk about Iran or you want to talk about this upcoming issue, the number to call, 215-383-5730, 215-383-5730, from Politico. The President Barack Obama wants to eliminate routine use of the legislative filibuster. So don't tell the Democrats, the Senate Democrats, that. No, folks, this sure is easy for a lame duck president to say. Even as his party's senators are preparing to mount their fourth filibuster in about a week. Okay, that would be routine, right? I mean, left. So even as the Smurfs are preparing to mount their fourth filibuster in a week on the GOP's Homeland Security bill, Obama suggested in an interview with Vox that disarming that legislative weapon is, quote, probably the one thing that we could change without a constitutional amendment that would make a difference in how Capitol Hill operates. Sounds pretty bold, right? I mean, left. The way the filibuster is used almost ensures greater gridlock and less clarity in terms of the positions of the parties. There's nothing in the Constitution that requires it, Obama said in an interview published Monday in response to the question about how to govern during increased polarization. Okay, so far, so good. The filibuster, he goes on, in the modern age probably just torques it too far in the direction of a majority party not being able to govern effectively and move towards its platform. Let me give that to you again, folks, because this just blew me away. The President of the United States, sitting ready with his veto pen, now with his party in the minority, said the filibuster in this modern age probably just torques it too far in the direction of a majority party not being able to govern effectively and move forward its platform. Okay, so far I agree. But does Obama even know who the minority party is or the majority party is at the moment? Maybe he should take the high ground here and submit a law to Congress limiting the number of filibusters per session, like they limit timeouts in a sports game. It would make sense for Obama to take the first step while his party is the minority, because if he did it while his party was the majority, then the motive would be quite questionable. But now, while it would hurt him and his party most, now is the time to push this conviction, if it is indeed a conviction. And so Obama goes on. The White House declined further comment on Monday. Wait, what? I thought he was going to go on. Declined further comment? I would have expected an, I said it, I meant it, let's do it. But not a declined further comment. Do you think maybe Obama was just talking off teleprompter again, and now everyone has to scurry around to backtrack something the president didn't really mean? You think Obama got a call from Queen Pelosi? From Prince Harry? So what do? They do what Smurfs do, as Tigger would say. They do what Smurfs do. They redefine a word or two. In this case, they're going to redefine routine use. This is amazing, folks. Just absolutely amazing. Democrats have vowed to be far more selective with the legislative filibuster. Meanwhile, they're mounting a fourth filibuster on a single bill. They vow to be far more selective with the legislative filibuster than the Republicans were during their 8 years in the minority, pointing to the agreements they've made this year on amendment votes and swift consideration of a pair of non-controversial bills. So if a bill is non-controversial, they're not going to filibuster it, and that's being more selective. Is that not just laughable? Any senator can hold up the Senate and require 60 votes for legislation the Democrats go on to advance, a practice that became increasingly popular among Republicans during Obama's presidency. They left out the part, by the way, where the Elmos were selective about filibustering bills with which they disagreed, which was most of them. But I guess the Smurfs are also redefining the word selective here, I suppose. But the 46 members of the Senate Democratic Caucus are wielding the filibuster too, slowing progress on the Keystone Pipeline in January and vowing this month to reject any Homeland Security bill that contains riders attacking Obama's amnesty program. They say that they will debate immigration, but only separate from the funding bill. So, the Smurfs, let's recall what the president said. The Smurfs are using the filibuster to hamper the majority party's ability to govern effectively and move forward its platform. The very reason Obama said we should eliminate the routine use of the filibuster. Of course, the Smurfs don't exactly see eye to eye with their lame duck prez. Here's what they said. Oh my God. We don't see ourselves as filibustering. But let me repeat it, because I didn't misread this. Barbara Mikulski, the Democrat from Maryland, Senator from Maryland, she said, we don't see ourselves as filibustering. We're not just stopping things to stop it. Now, let's reverse the tape here. The Democrats have said they will reject any Homeland Security bill that contains riders attacking Obama's immigration policy. They're not just rejecting that just to stop it, right? Yeah, you are. You have no intention of defunding Obama's amnesty program. None. You will filibuster it when it comes to the floor as a separate bill. It doesn't matter what you are going to stop it just to stop it. The filibuster is a part of your attempt to stop it, just to stop it. Anyway, Mikulski qualifies her statement. We feel we were actually being constructive. So stopping something to stop it when a Smurf does it is constructive, and there it is. When the Elmos filibuster, it's obstructive, but when the Smurfs filibuster, they're being constructive. Folks, they have been doing this since forever. The most classic example was Billy Boy, but it depends on what the meaning of the word is. If the word isn't working for you, just call up Mr. Webster and put in a request for the lexicon change of the week. In an interview with Vox, Obama reminisced. He reminisced. He thought that. Those were such nostalgic times, the first 2 years of his presidency, when the Democrats held the House and for a long time had 60 votes in the Senate, which for a few months gave the filibuster far less impact than it had since then. And there it is again. When the Smurfs are in the majority, they want to weaken the filibuster so the majority can govern effectively and move forward its platform. You need to look no further than Prince Harry's short-sighted rules change 2 years back to figure this out. Obama says, my first 2 years in office, when I had a Democrat majority and a Democratic House and a Democrat Senate, we were as productive as any time since Lyndon Johnson's, Obama said. Productive? Try destructive. And when the majority went away, stuff got blocked. When we are the majority, this is what he's saying, when we are the majority, when Democrats are the majority, it's all good. The Senate's former Democrat majority abolished the filibuster for almost all nominations in 2013, and some Republicans are now proposing to gut it for the nominations to the Supreme Court. Boy, they must be real confident about 2016. But there is no serious effort in either party to eliminate the filibuster on legislation. Nobody wants that to happen. That's because each party knows that at some point they will be the minority in the Senate, and they will want the power to block because the filibuster is the only power in the Senate that the minority has. It is that simple. The minority can be steamrolled in the House, but they cannot be steamrolled in the Senate as long as the minority has the filibuster. It's that simple. But if the Smurfs can get the upper hand on defining routine and selective use of the filibuster, then maybe, just maybe, the Smurfs can get their way even when they are the minority. Now, wouldn't that be a hoot? Well, that's a wrap for tonight's show, folks. And my palm will reopen tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Check the website to see what's up for tomorrow's show, 1111broadcasting.com. The show is indeed already posted. I posted it while we were doing this show. Such the multitasker I am. I'll give you a little teaser. We're going to pick on, just a little bit, my second favorite state in the union over there on the left coast. I hope you'll join us. And until tomorrow night, do what you love and love what you do. Good night, everybody.